Good morning, Jennifer.
How are you?
We are not happy with our technology.
Oh, no.
Amy is a goofball, so we can't figure it out, but it's, or I can't figure it out, but it's okay. Oh,
no, you're going to help us with this. You know, I'm sure the happiness dare is something that will help us in these moments when what worked yesterday suddenly doesn't work today. This is Sherry Gregory, and you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules. Today, my delightful co-host, Amy Carroll, and I are talking with Jennifer Dukes Lee about her new book, The Happiness Dare, finding the sweet spot of your heart's deepest, holiest, and most vulnerable desire.
So, Jennifer, what is up with Christians who think that frowning is more virtuous than smiling? It's so funny. I think about, I guess the way we always say it, if we're being super spiritual, is that I choose joy over happiness. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a very common question. I think, unfortunately, over the last 100 years, happiness has definitely gotten a bad rap. Even 100, 200, 300 years ago, such distinctions weren't made, and Jesus didn't make those kinds of distinctions. The church has tried to make this division between joy and happiness, and so we become sort of scared of the word happiness. And it's true that happiness and joy aren't the same, but they certainly aren't opposites. Let me just give you an example. A while back, do you remember the mother who put on the Chewbacca mask?
Oh, how could we forget her?
Right?
Best.
Right? I posted a video of her, and I made a remark about how happy she was. Somebody very well-meaning put into the comments of my blog post, but don't you think this has more to do with her joy in Jesus than her actual happiness? It's like we're
sister super spiritual, I'm telling you.
I mean, this really just happened not very long ago. What I'm thinking here is that I don't think that anybody can look at Chewbacca mom and say with a straight face, oh, she's joyful, all right, but she is definitely not happy.
That is so true.
Right? That would be absurd. She exuded happiness. And so if someone says they have the joy of the Lord, but you have to dig like a mile deep to find evidence of it, I think the question we have to ask is that really joy? Now, granted, there are seasons where we don't have happiness and where we do have joy. Mm. And so in some ways, in the lives of a Christian, joy is more durable and a deeper evidence of the work of the Lord and the Holy Spirit in people. But we shouldn't throw happiness out as some kind of evil cousin of joy, right?
That's a great distinction.
I think that, you know, I have a lot of definitions for happiness that I talk about. One of them is this, and I think it helps us as Christians when we talk about joy and happiness. For me, happiness is the outward expression of an inward joy that is found in Jesus. And so we naturally have a happiness. I think God expects us to be happy. Like, grumpy Christians are horrible advertisements for Jesus. I have a hard time thinking that people would find the gospel very attractive. I think one of the first things that people can do is, you know, look into the scriptures and find evidence of a happy God, of a God with a sense of humor, even just by looking at what he's created, some of the crazy animals and fish and birds that he has created. And the fact that children learn how to smile before they even learn how to say a word.
Oh, so, I love that.
Yeah. God also created tears, just as the same God who created our smile created our tears. So happiness isn't kind of a slap a smile on your face and everything is going to be okay. Happiness, it's something that wells up deeply from that inward joy that's found in Jesus.
I want to talk about one of the major happiness hijackers that you talk about in the book. If I could be just like her. I so resonate with that one.
Well, I think that we give away so much of our happiness when we're looking for it in someone else's life, when we don't stop to pause and see the happiness that is created right under our own 2 feet. I think comparison is one of the major hijackers of happiness, if I could just be like her. And the crazy thing about it is that the person that you're comparing your life to is also comparing hers to someone else. Mm-hmm. who's also comparing hers to someone else. And so this cycle goes where we're comparing our lives to someone else, and then no one is happy. And it's exacerbated on social media by a filtered existence. I think it was Stephen Furtick who first said that we compare our behind the scenes with everyone else's highlight reel. And that can leave us feeling so unsettled and really unhappy. So yeah, that's a huge happiness hijacker. And so, you know, one of the things that I encourage people to do is, instead of wishing for her life, find happiness in my own. And sometimes that can be really hard, because there's some people, some of your listeners right now are like, yeah, but you don't have my life. Mm-hmm. You don't know what I'm going through. There is no doubt that happiness is a feeling, but it's also a decision. And happiness is a choice that we get to make every day, even on our hardest days.
One thing that I thought was revolutionary in your book, and by the way, I love it so much and cannot put it down, was that there's this idea that you introduced us to, that there are different happiness styles, and you have a quiz in the book, and I love a quiz.
Yes, I do. I have 5 happiness styles, and when I was doing my research on happiness, when I took my own happiness dare to see if this was even okay to be a happy Christian, I found that there are 5 main determinants of happiness: believing that one's life has purpose, having a sense of belonging, pulling happiness from moments and experiences in life, like a vacation or a picnic in the backyard or what have you. 4 is helping others feel loved and cherished. And then 5th is using the power of our minds to learn, plan, and dream. So out of those 5 determinants of happiness came these 5 happiness styles: the doers, the relators, the experiencers, the givers, and the thinkers. And so all of us as Christians are a combination of all 5 types, but most of us have one style that will rise to the top because of the way we were wired by God. So that's why on a Saturday night, a relator is excited about going to the block party at the end of the cul-de-sac, but a thinker is content watching a documentary on TV. An experiencer wants to hike through the park and watch the sunset over the lake, and a doer, I mean, she might actually be really happy weeding the garden on a Saturday night. And a giver might prefer to serve soup at the homeless shelter. And so, you know, I created this assessment to help people identify their style, and it's available at the back of the book, but it's also available right now online at thehappinessdare.com. So you can just click on the yellow icon and go right to the assessment. And in 5 minutes, you'll be able to clearly identify your style.
I love this because it gives us permission to enjoy what we actually enjoy, not what other people think we should enjoy. I'm in the midst of writing a research paper, and on Saturday night, I was literally looking up journal articles and having the time of my life. But I'm not sure that I really wanted to confess that on Facebook, because most of my friends might have thought I was crazy.
Right. And so you might be a thinker. I'll be so excited to hear what you find out.
Definitely. I've taken it. I'm definitely a thinker. I'm an overthinker, but I'm definitely a thinker.
So a lot of us just need that permission and that affirmation. Of a lot of us just feel weird or different, that what makes everybody else happy doesn't make me happy. I remember going to a scrapbooking party 10 or 15 years ago, and it was a Friday night, and there were all these women, and they were cutting these pictures and writing these beautiful descriptions under pictures, and they were all like in this sublime state of bliss. And I'm like, I do not like this. I am the opposite of happy. I'm cutting off my baby's heads. My handwriting isn't nice. This is not fun for me. And so, you know, and I'm looking around thinking, but Jennifer, this is what women love. This is what women do. And so what I have found as women have been taking that test is, I'm not weird or different. I'm wonderful. Like, this is how God made me. And so I think it's helpful for us to know who we are. It's also helpful for us to know our family members' styles so that we can relate to them and understand what makes them happy. But also, when we understand our own style, we have to understand that there are red flags that come with it. So since I'm a doer, I am prone to be a workaholic and prone to legalism and perfectionism. I can throw myself so much into the happiness of my work and my doing that I can actually fall out of my sweet spot of happiness and fall right into like idolatry, really, idolatry of work. So the area where we're most wired to experience happiness is the area where the enemy will come in and most tempt us to step outside of our sweet spot and step right into sin.
So good. And I love that you give us permission. You talk about stalking happiness. I love that picture.
Yeah, that is that. I love that image too, because I think that in a world that right now feels really heavy, a world that is very cynical, that expects the worst to happen, we really have to stalk happiness. And not only for our own selves and our own well-being, but as an example for our families and for our communities, for our world, that happiness is possible. It's not only permissible by God, but it is possible and achievable through Him. And so we stock it for the good of all and the glory of God.
Another thing I really kind of latched on in your book is this whole concept of good enough. And boy, that's one I still wrestle with, because I come from a background of being the A++, arguing for even a half point of extra credit. And so putting the words good and enough next to each other still feels very suspect to me. But you also talked about satisficers and maximizers, and there were some real surprises in there for me. Can you talk about this whole idea of good enough?
Yes, good enough is really hard for people like us who achieve excellence and find value in excellence, which of course the Lord asks us to do our work with excellence. But it's this fine line that exists between excellence and perfectionism. And I am so prone to jump over that line. And sometimes I have to realize that good enough is good enough. And then, instead of rat racing our way toward the A+, what research is showing is, like you mentioned, there are the maximizers and the satisficers. Barry Schwartz actually came up with these terms. He's a psychologist. Satisficers settle for good enough. Maximizers are always going for the gold. And you can about guess which type is happier. The maximizers do earn more in the workplace, but they question every decision they make. They suffer from fear of missing out. They're raising that bar, and they face disappointment when they fail to reach these standards that they set for themselves. And so they are actually less satisfied with their jobs than the satisficers. The satisficers settle for less than perfect. They settle for good enough. They might not earn as much as their maximizer friends, and they may not, like, you know, lead their team to victory or what have you, but they know what it means to cut themselves some slack. And in the end, research shows us that the satisficers are considerably happier. It's hard, though, because culture sells us a different promise. We have expectations in our work for standards of high excellence. I'm headed to Haiti in a few days, and I have to give 4 talks. And I haven't had an opportunity to prepare like I normally would, partly because presenting the gospel to women in a third world country is a lot different from presenting it to American women. And so a speaker friend of mine said, "Jennifer, so often you are going for such a high level of excellence that you're only giving God so much room to show His faithfulness." What would it be like to just go completely empty just once, Jennifer? What would it be like just to risk, you know, making a little bit of a fool of yourself and seeing how faithful God can be? And I really feel, oddly enough, for me, that is what God is telling me to do, is to not go like prepared with a manuscript like I am prone to do, but to let His excellence lead this time. And it's hard, because the principle of good enough is not an excuse to be a slacker. We still do need to be excellent in our work and in our parenting and what have you. But I think it does, it's a wake-up call for me, a big wake-up call for me.
Well, and it explains why I have been so resentful my entire life of people who didn't work as hard as I did, didn't try as hard, didn't do as well, but still seemed happier. It just seems so unfair. And so now I'm recognizing, I think you mentioned that those who get the bronze medal are actually happier than those who get the gold. And that actually makes sense, to be happy to have medaled at all.
Right. The silver medalists, they are more inclined to compare themselves to the gold medal winners, whereas the bronze medalists generally compare themselves to someone who didn't get a medal, which isn't really a very good idea either to compare, but it does illustrate the point, doesn't it?
I think it's just a matter of perspective. For me, it's a very understandable way of realizing, hang on, you can still be really, really good. I mean, getting a medal is great,
Right.
Without having to always be the best of the best of the best. What's my bronze medal is kind of becoming my new mantra. How can I aim for the bronze, be pleased with that level of achievement, and just be happy rather than doing the way extra effort to go far, far, far above? For those of us who've been the A++ girls, realizing that 93% is still an A.
Right.
90% is still an A. It really doesn't matter if we got all the bonus points and stuff. Finding that good enough so that we can relax and then truly enjoy what we are doing has been a struggle, but a worthwhile one.
Yeah, perfect performances don't generally boost our happiness, which can be a surprise to perfectionists. But we have a hard time enjoying our success because there's always something better that could be done, or else something else where we have to have some level of mastery on the next task in front of us. So we don't spend a lot of time lingering and being grateful for what good thing has already been done, because we're already projecting into the future so far about how we might fail to reach that level of achievement the next time around.
Jennifer, I was just reading this morning about this idea of lingering and why lingering increases happiness. Would you talk about that?
Yes, when you linger, you're letting yourself sit with good thoughts. So in the example that I just spoke of, a perfectionist or a person completes a task, and when you linger, you sit and think about, wow, I got that done. That was great. I feel so good that I just completed writing this chapter in a book, or stepping back and looking at the bed that you just made, like, that looks so pretty. I love my bedroom. I love that bedspread. I'm so glad I have that. Like, lingering in that moment, just a small, even 10 seconds of lingering. But what we tend to do is immediately jump to the next thing on the to-do list without lingering on the good that has been done. We do the same things, right, with compliments. Someone will pay you a compliment and you don't let that linger. Like, but the next time someone pays you a compliment, let it linger, like really linger in and set in on the good that has been spoken over you. Another thing that we can do is linger on those promises in the Bible. You know, after you've done your quiet time in the morning, what does God say about who you are? Like, what is he speaking into your identity? Linger on that just a little bit longer. Linger on who God says you are. I think that's really important in boosting happiness.
And learning to linger is going to slow us down and make us a little less accomplishment oriented. Well, Amy and I are going to be diving in and taking the happiness dare. So how should we, I know this is going to be a very perfectionistic question already, but I just have to ask, how do we do it right? How do we prepare? And are there any cautions you can give us so we don't make mistakes and are guaranteed to do it right?
Guaranteed success. I think, first of all, is the first step is to take that quiz so that you can be affirmed in who you are. To answer those questions honestly and don't overthink the answers. We can tend to be overthinkers, right? And thinking, oh, there's a superior happiness style, and that must be giver because Jesus was such a giver. No, the Bible is filled with evidence that God appreciated and created all the styles, and that he is all of those styles. God is definitely a doer. And look at Jesus' thinking and the experiences that he created. Jesus was the ultimate experiencer. I mean, he walked on water and he made everything. All of his lessons are done in such a creative, experiential way. And so God is a combination of all those happiness types. So I think preparing yourself to accept the style that you are and live into that, into how God created you to be, and to know that you are capable, all of us are capable for a happiness boost immediately by putting into practice simple practices that are outlined in the book. Research tells us that 50% of our happiness is governed by our genes, our genetic makeup. We have a set point for happiness, just the same way we have set points for metabolism and intelligence and our athleticism. And then 10% of our happiness is dictated by the circumstances in our life, the good things that happen in our life or the bad things. So that leaves a full 40% that's left to us. And in that 40%, research tells us, is the key to increasing our happiness. That 40% is within our ability to control, and it includes what we do and how we think. And that can begin today by applying some really basic principles.
That's terrific. Really helpful as we get started, because I've already signed my happiness dare in my book. I'm ready to go.
You overachiever. You beat me.
This
time I was the maximizer.
All righty. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Thank you for your time. And we will be absolutely praying for you for your time in Haiti.
Thank you so much.
You know, one bad rule that's haunted me ever since I was a kid is the one that goes like this. God cares about your holiness, not about your happiness. I spent decades feeling guilty that I was looking for happiness, and I felt way less spiritual than people who focus just on holiness. So it's a relief to realize that holiness and happiness aren't opposites. We were created to experience and express the joy of the Lord. If you head on over to the webpage for today's episode at sherrygregory.com, that's C-H-E-R-I-G-R-E-G-O-R-Y.com, you'll find links to some great resources from Jennifer. You can take the Happiness Style Assessment, download Chapter 1 of the Happiness Dare, sign up for Dare of the Day, 10 days of happiness dares right in your inbox, and you'll even find the ultimate happy playlist. We hope you've enjoyed episode number 12 of Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules. Next week, Amy and I will be back sharing what we're learning from taking the happiness dare. For today, grow your grit, embrace God's grace, and when you run across a bad rule, go right on ahead and break it.
We love technology. We love technology.